Welcome to episode 140 of The Worst People We Know. I'm Jeff.
I'm 40 and Sean.
Oh, I'm 40 as well, but I'm also Mike. Also Mike?
You're also Mike.
Today's episode, we'll talk about investments and innuendos with discussions on index investing and Dick Branson's edging experiment. I love the
Nobody
copy.
Has ever called Richard Branson Dick Branson.
I know, why not? Dick Branson, such a, such a baller name.
Yeah, he probably goes by that. Well, all right. Did you have something to add here, Mike?
I do have something to add. I have a couple somethings to add. So one, I think we should take some time to pour one out for Fleets. If you guys saw the news today.
Oh, I didn't.
Twitter Fleets has flooded.
They're done?
They're done. Well, they Twitter put out a tweet about Fleets.
Okay.
Saying,
so far I'm with
we
you.
We will be no longer be running tweets as of August 3rd. We're sorry or you're welcome, depending on your view of it.
At least they understood it then, I guess. Well,
that's
especially
exactly
the
right. Yeah, yeah. I also have a new sponsor this week based on a product that I use.
Oh.
Really?
So our sponsor this week is no, we'll go, is this probably pre-roll? I don't really know. Biobags. You know Biobags as the 3-gallon compostable bags that you use for your San Francisco compost pickup. But did you also know that Biobags are great for storing human biological waste? I'm not talking about grandpa's insulin needles. I'm talking about the feces of our youngest environmentalists. My 2.5-year-old poops in bio bags when we're at the park. And it's been great for a quick disposal. Bio bags are great for all sorts of organic material. Now in 9 colors. Available 50% off at stoptheSteal.com, a website that's full of shit. Bio bags.
I am so confused by all of what's going on right now. Firstly.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Did you really get paid to say that?
No, I didn't get paid by, by the biobag
corporations. Are those compostable? Like, I take
the green ones,
those.
Right?
Yeah, because they don't really compost. They just like turn into like microplastics, I think. But people are like,
and
oh,
does
they
your
compost.
2-year-old really poop in them?
Small. Yeah.
That's my second question.
Oh, my 2-year-old does poop in them. So there's a thing called a portable potty. So when one is, even if one is prepared to not pee or poop themselves, and sometimes you're out and about and they're like, hey, I got to go.
Yeah.
And there's not a place. And they're not necessarily capable of holding it for more than a minute after that warning has been.
Amen. I'm with them, you know?
Yeah.
I know
there's this like plastic thing that you have that like has fold over legs on it. So you just fold it in. And it basically is the shape of it's the size of a Frisbee once it's folded up. You unfold it, you drop a plastic bag in it. They come with their own bags.
Oh, I've seen those.
They have
things,
like an absorptive thing in it.
Yeah.
But we just drop a bio bag in there and a paper towel. You're good to go, baby.
Well, so what is now, what's the issue with bio bags here, Sean? I mean, I've heard the same thing where, well, maybe I heard it from you, that they say they're compostable, but are they really compostable in the sense that they actually compost to something that you'd want, you know, other than just smaller plastic?
Yeah, I think they don't, because that's like Whole Foods recently started, you know, like the bags they give you for produce. Like they're essentially using the same thing. And one checkout person was like, oh, but they're, it's like, oh, I don't like, it was at the beginning of COVID and I used to bring my own bags and you couldn't do that anymore. And I have like reusable produce bags. And they said, oh, but at least these are compostable. And I didn't really feel like getting into it at that point. So I didn't, but I've looked up like there's a lot of different compostable plastics that they even make cups. And I think what it ends up being is
I think there's biodegradable and compostable. Those are two different things.
Well, it's plant. Yeah, it's plant based. I don't think my understanding, none of the plastic actually like it doesn't break down in the same way. Like a paper bag can be compostable. It will just break down to the like natural component fiber again. But the plastic isn't going to.
Atoms or something.
Yeah, it's not going back into like
it just
you
won't
can
be
make
bag.
It out of corn. It's not going to be the same as like putting a corn cob in soil. It just it will. It's always been like modified into a plastic substance. It might. So I don't even know if it's better because I was thinking like you've got a big if you have one of those hefty yard bags that are like heavy duty plastic.
Yeah,
that'll at least be plastic for a long time. So you could gather up, do something with it. But these bags, they start. I used to use them in San Francisco until I decided I didn't really care for them. They'll fall apart when you start to put something in them. So
well, yeah, there's that.
They're already like decomposing from the get go. And I feel like then they're getting into the soil, water supply, all that kind of stuff.
Once you poop in them, it takes like you don't want to be carrying them around for days. You know,
well,
I made that mistake.
Well, I'm on plasticplace.com, which of course was before this conversation was going to be my recommendation. I spent a lot of time on plasticplace.com.
Oh, great website.
And
Great place for plastics.
One of the top blog posts that I've seen on plasticplace.com is 5 surprising facts about biodegradable plastic bags.
Oh, yeah.
And they do make a distinction between compostable plastic bags and biodegradable bags, which I will not get into here because I do not want to rob you, the listener, of the excitement of stumbling upon this yourself.
That's your wreck this week.
My wreck is pooping in plastic bags.
Well, so I know there's a thing. There is a product called Wag Bags that are made for like backcountry camping, and it's essentially you can make your own by like filling a bag with kitty litter. But these are more. It would be good for a backpacking trip. They pack down small, but they have like a deodorizer or something like that will make it. Palatable in case you want to eat it, I guess.
in case you want to palate it, tolerable
if you've got to like haul it back with you. But that's an interest. It sounds like you're essentially creating those yourself for probably much cheaper. I know like the Wag Bags might cost like $2 or $5 each. Like they're expensive if you wanted
that's
to
a serious
to get
bag.
Some. Yeah, they're like yeah. emergency pooping only.
Gotcha.
All right. Fair enough.
Well, yeah. So pooping in bags to the stock market, I mean, it's a pretty obvious transition.
Same thing.
Yeah. Any other shitty jokes that we should get out before we start going? All right.
So, I saw this thing in the title of the article was Anybody Can Beat the Stock Market. And that's cool. But what interested me, we talked about Tesla joining, I think it was in December, it was added to the S&P 500. And we weren't, I remember when we talked about it, we weren't entirely sure, at least I wasn't, how that happens. If you manage an index fund, the idea of an index fund, if you manage it for the S&P 500 is you will own in that fund, if you're the fund manager, all the assets in the S&P 500 on any given day, because you need to track the performance in that. But it wasn't clear to me then, like, is that actually like a legal requirement? Is it a FINRA requirement? Is it a SEC requirement? It seems like it's not. It's just, people are managing the funds. They just don't want to screw it up. And they don't want to be off on that. But if you remember, like Tesla did something crazy. I ended up selling some shares at like, I don't remember if it was like $800 or $900. Now they're down at like $600. So it was a good time to sell and a terrible time to buy if you were a fund manager. But you needed to, and this article pointed out, A, that's dumb. But the reason they do it, they have a thing called tracking error, which is what funds are ultimately judged on more so than performance, especially an index fund, is how well do you track the assets that you're indexing against. So if you're if you track the S&P and you didn't buy Tesla on time and say it shot up to like $2,000, that'd be unfortunate because you'd be lagging that and you'd have a negative tracking error. Because you'd be behind that index, but the opposite could happen where you buy it and then it drops afterwards, which is exactly what happened with Tesla. But it seemed like it didn't make sense to me why they would do it. And the article was pointing out that these fund managers feel like they have to do it because it's such a crowded space. They're competing for attention. Most of these, like an S&P managed fund, they have to purchase the asset.
Oh, sure.
On that day. So Tesla was added on like December 18th. They had to buy it that day because one of their competitors would say, oh, this guy's got bad tracking error because he misses it. But you could have significant positive tracking error where you're like, I beat this index by, I'm continually beating or matching this index by 5%. But
then, so, I mean, as someone who has like sort of been through this a little bit and like dealt with people's expectations on these things, like I've never understood most of this until you get down to it, which is basically like you're advertising that you're tracking the S&P 500. If you were consistently beating it, then that would be fantastic, but you probably shouldn't be an index fund. Like you could probably make more money
yeah,
being an actively managed fund that more or less tracks it, but generally beats it. But you're, I mean, I see what you're saying, and it is almost silly that they feel obligated to do this exactly on the time. But if you're buying an index fund, that's what you want, right? The index.
I suppose, and I guess the error, you would imagine over time, the error would probably balance out, that you'd have positive and negative tracking errors.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't, like,
as long as you're consistent.
So this guy that was quoted in the article was essentially saying, he's like, well, my strategy is Tesla was added, but the one that was removed was Apartment Investment Management, known as AIMCO. And that's up. So the S&P 500 this year is up 17%. AIMCO is up 20% this year. So he's like, sell. His strategy is essentially buy when you know something might be added to the S&P, sell it when it's added, buy the thing that gets dropped because it will outperform the index in the following year because everyone has to sell it. There's such a significant off-selling or sell-off of that. That
so wait till the sell off and then buy it back. Yeah,
so you can buy that when buy that dip. And I guess
do wonder, like, well, maybe it is just a function of how big the index ETF community has been recently. But like, I do wonder. Like, Tesla is an easy example, right? Because it moves like crazy, and you know, no one wants to buy it when it gets added because everyone's already in it, and but if it was just some random, but I guess this other, what was it, Apartment Investments? Mm-hmm. That's sort of a nothing. I mean, in terms of hype and you know, following, that's a nothing company. So maybe that does work. I don't know.
Well, and you'd think, like, it's interesting. You hear that's the one that's getting dropped. So you assume, like, if you don't know any better, you just, right. I think you'd assume something bad has happened.
If I knew a guy who knew how to write algorithms, trading algorithms.
Yeah.
I would tell him about this and see if he could write this algorithm, and then I would give him my money.
The problem, and I'll give it a shot, but the problem with these types of things is, like, they only add things once a year.
No, well, so he said it happens 10 times a year.
It does?
Yeah. I mean, not necessarily not for this index. S&P, but there's plenty of index funds, so he's found, like,
they call them index eyes, I believe.
Indices?
Mm.
That sounds better. Yeah, we'll go with yours.
But yeah, I mean, that's probably harder to figure. You've got to pay attention to, like, the universe of, at least, yeah. I mean, he's probably looking at
all of these things.
A number of funds, but more than just the S&P. But I was surprised how often it happened. There was something else he said about.
He's probably tracking you know, you're tracking them in Japan and China and, you know, every index there is. So 10 times a year, that's still not a ton, but yeah, maybe it works. I don't know.
How much GameStop does he own? That's how we know if he's a pro.
Has that been added yet? It feels like it should be.
You know what's crazy about that I always, like, I've been thinking about? I was thinking about it on the toilet today, which is the only time you should think about GameStop. Like, how much money have they raised? Like, over $1 billion, right? Just because their stock price is absurdly inflated?
Oh, yeah. I mean...
So, like, on a share price, not great for the shareholder or whatever, but in terms of the actual value of the company, valued quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, like, they've just... Cash literally, you know, hits the balance sheet. So, like, the company has become more valuable because idiots value it.
Yeah, I mean, hey. Yeah. You don't need a good reason. It's just people. That's the whole thing about all this these days. It's like everyone's opinion matters, so let's listen to everyone's opinion. If you get enough idiots, their opinion matters.
Everyone's opinion has impact.
Well, but that, it's that's the same, true. The weird thing, I mean, you're just describing how a market works, really. But the weird thing is, like, normally the stock market is supposed to be, or historically I think was a reflection of the real market that these industries operated in. So GameStop goes up organically because the market for video games and knickknacks goes up.
Yeah, it's the dog. But this is like the tail.
Yeah, exactly. Going the opposite way around, where people are like, nah, we'll just bypass the step of the actual.
But do you
production
think
part?
That's so. I see what you're saying, right? It's like, oh, GameStop's going to go up, so the market should then value that, or the GameStop's doing well, the market should value that, and they're going to buy the stock, and the stock's going to go up. But this whole thing, I mean, maybe for the reasons weren't particularly good in this one case, but like, if people just decide, like, I don't want AMC to go out of business, like, I'm just going to run this stock up, yeah, and then they can raise more money, and now we still have AMC or GameStop or whatever. It is sort of like a vote with your dollar. You're like, I like this company.
Even more direct. The margins are like the every dollar you put into the company in the stock like becomes like almost a one for one in the valuation. But if you spend a dollar at GameStop, they might have reasonable margins, but they're going to be paying out. They've got suppliers expenses, and rent, sure, and all these other things. But this is just, it's like donating to somebody versus buying like a cookie from their bake sale. Like if you just gave them a straight up donation, they get all that money versus if you bought the same amount in cookies where they've got some inputs.
Here's something if you got a real set of cojones.
Mm. Smooth ones?
GameStop is currently at $166 a share. This is going to be like, for people who don't understand call options, this comment none's going to give a shit about. Would you write an uncovered call at $800 strike price?
Write a call?
I would never write a naked call.
A naked call. So like,
especially you on GameStop,
$800.
So you sell for how many?
Like what?
So you
what
make
term?
The premium.
What term?
For what? So November 19th expiring.
So 4 months from now.
4 months from now. GameStop's at $166 right now.
$800 call option.
Yeah. And you know what it's going for?
The minimum I could what?
$6.80. So you can write one contract, make $680, and it expires. And you just take the premium.
Yeah.
But you have to sweat whether some idiots are going to run that thing
on
up
that
to
is massive.
For people that don't know options, the downside is if GameStop goes above $800.
Loss is infinite.
You eat whatever.
If I mean, it goes to 2,000, you eat $1,200. Say it got to $800, you're at what? $700. You're at like a $700 per share loss. The minimum contract size is 100 shares.
Mm-hmm.
So you're at
$80,000.
$70,000 loss for a potential $600 gain. It seems safe, but
although
you don't know.
Buying GameStop. Well, see, that's the thing is traditionally you sell a covered call, right? You'd buy the stock and then you'd sell the call on it. So you're not really, you're just losing potential upside. You're not losing actual dollars because you own the stock that you have to give over.
Yeah.
But with GameStop, I mean, it could just crash back down to 80. It just,
writing a covered call on it now actually is like not, I mean, you got to put a lot of capital down for the return, I guess is the issue. Like,
yeah.
So. $6 return.
On but I mean, Sean owns some. You know, you could just write some.
I own two shares. We need like a grouping.
More.
Like a partial share options club.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, I do like this idea, though. This anyone beats the stock market thing. It is. It seems like some like a good underlying strategy, you know, that would just boost performance a little bit, even if it wasn't your main strategy.
Well, I was thinking about it. It was clear to me on the other side, the Tesla side, and I kind of just dismissed if Aimco was a company you knew, like if it was like GE and somehow they got dumped, you're like, well, they'll probably, they're not at the end of the rope, but like it was
right.
Like apartment investment and management. It sounds like it could just be like some shitty, management company that you have in an apartment building. So I think it.
Well, it depends on whether or not they get the mineral rights on those apartments.
That's the key.
That's important.
That is the key.
So, can I give you a little sidebar on housing? Because I'm reading this book on housing right now.
Yeah,
sure.
If you ever consider becoming a city manager, just don't do it. That's the lesson that I've learned. So this chapter that I just read in this book, it's about I'm reading this book. It's called Golden Gates. It's about affordable housing and housing policy, which is a real sleeper for most people.
Sorry, what was that? I was dozing off.
I noticed you were. That, you're yawning there. But it goes, it's a very complicated subject, right? Because it's like, well, do people have the right to affordable housing? And like, there's a market mechanism and all this kind of shit, right? So this guy writes this, he's writing this story about Lafayette, California, which is like this little suburb in the East Bay, but it's all rich white people, right? It's like basically the size of Long Valley. It's like 25,000 people, and it's like all the houses are like multi-million dollars. So that's different from Long Valley, but like super, super rich people. So it turns out there's this parcel of land there that's 22 acres that's next to the highway that in the 1960s was zoned for dense housing. So basically like apartments and shit like that, right? Mm-hmm. But some old curmudgeon lived there and was just sitting on it for forever. And he died. And everyone who bought $1 million homes above this property just assumed that it was like protected land.
Right.
They were wrong. So the daughter of this guy who owned this land teams up with a developer and puts a proposal on the land for a 314 unit apartment complex. And like the neighborhood goes ballistic and they lose their mind or whatever. And the guy who's the city manager is looking at it. This is 2011. He goes, well, this is never going to happen. This guy knows this is never going to happen. I'm not going to worry about it. And so then he gets a letter from the developer saying, so basically what's going to happen, the city council was going to change the zoning so that it was single family home only.
Hmm.
Well, there's a law just that says,
people went nuts.
Because people went nuts and the city council wants to get reelected. They're, you know, rich white people who are racist too. And so they don't want people who are poor in their neighborhood. And so they're just going to like kill it. And they're going to change the zoning to single family home. Like in Long Valley, I think there's a city ordinance that says you can't have a development that's less than like, or you can't build a house that's less than 5 acres of property now. Right. It's like something like that where it's crazy. So just to stop developers from developing any land there. So they were going to try and do something like that. And it turns out that there's a law in California that says you can't change the zoning of an area just because you don't like what the developer is proposing for it. So if you have received a proposal for the land, that's locked in. You can't change it, right? Yeah. So nobody ever sues on that because typically it's a developer who, like, they need approval on future projects and all this other stuff. So they just don't want to, like, piss off
people. Well, they probably don't want to go through the burden of that too, like
right, the cost of the litigation. So well, they know that the litigation is going to happen, right? And so like these guys are like, well, Lafayette's such a, like, those guys are such assholes, they'll never approve anything anyway, I'll never get another building permit through anyway, I might as well sue them. So the guy says, listen, if you try and block it, we're going to use this thing called the HHA and we're going to sue you. And like it took the town a couple of weeks going through it, like, oh, we're going to lose this. This is going to be bad. And so, you know, they throw up every roadblock that everybody throws up for development. Like, we need to do an earthquake study. We need to do an environmental study. Like, so delay the thing for like 2 years. And then it's coming to a couple of weeks before the city council votes to approve it or not approve it. And like the guy's like, the writing's on the wall for the city manager. He knows what's going to happen. The city council's not going to approve it because everyone in the neighborhood is losing their minds about it. And then they're going to get sued by the developer and they're going to lose. The developer's going to win in court. And he's like, so this is, and then we're going to have to pay for a really expensive lawsuit that we're not going to win. So he's like, well, let me try and negotiate with the guy. So he negotiates with the guy and he's talking to him, and like they go through, they have a bunch of meetings, and the guy, like they like, listen, fine. Like, we understand, we'll change this to 44 single family homes and we'll build you a soccer field and a baseball field and a park. So like the neighbors will like it. Okay, great. People still are pissed off about it, but less people are pissed off about it. Mm-hmm. So it goes through another 2 years of bullshit, environmental checks and earthquake checks and whatever, whatever, whatever. And the city council is like, all right, well, there's a few enough people that are pissed about it. This is way better than us like trying to like say no to this again and being stuck with a 314. So we're just going to approve it. 2 days before that meeting, they get a letter from a renters' rights group that says, we're going to sue you because this is not dense enough. Oh, apparently, Jesus. You can do that too, where you can sue, like from a law that's 20 years ago, that you can sue a township that is working against affordable housing. And so this guy's just like, fuck my life. Like,
yeah.
What really? Am I going to do? 5 years of that. 5 years. Oh,
that sounds gross. Terrible. Doesn't sound fun at all.
Yeah, but you probably get like when you go to the local restaurant, if you're on the city council, you get like free breadsticks and other bullshit.
Yeah,
like,
that's good.
I'm sure there's perks.
Yeah,
can you
true.
Imagine wanting that job? Like, oh yeah, I want to be a person who listens to this all day long.
Well, that's the problem, right? Those jobs, they should be, and we give, I feel like we all give Congress shit for not really, you know, doing what they should be doing or doing their job, and they spend more time worrying about getting reelected and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But the reality of the situation is like you want to be a city planner because you want to do good and you want to make it awesome. And then the reality is you're just stuck with bickering assholes one way, you know, no matter what you do, someone's mad and there's no.
But think like, I don't know, for me, I have to like, I'm typing fucking numbers in a computer all the time, like making sure I'm not making mistakes. These people just have to sit there and like, it's annoying, but you're just listening maybe. And they're probably, they can tune out. They're in meetings again. They probably get like perks at restaurants. I think you guys are missing all the benefits of being a city
council. Yeah, the perks at restaurants. I mean, you know what like a $5 gift card does to a bill at Olive Garden? That's a serious discount. Talk to me about activist investors, Sean.
Well, you guys remember we talked about the little engine that could, engine number one.
Yeah, fund, I remember that.
ExxonMobil a few episodes back. So I got an email from Betterment, who I use for some robo-advising, and they have this new ticker. I love all these like glam vanity tickers now. It's called Vote, and it's activist investor indexed ETFs, exchange-traded fund, was recently launched by them. And essentially, it looks to be, it's just like I think like market cap weighted index, large cap U.S. stocks. So like things that are in it are all the usual suspects you'd expect, like Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Tesla, Berkshire, blah blah blah. But they're actually trying to they're approaching it. It's still like a low fee diversified index fund, something like the other big three investors, Vanguard, BlackRock, State Street would do. But those companies have been criticized in the past for not really taking on an activist role, even though they end up owning a significant number of shares. So engine number one's play on this is essentially creating that same product, and they're low. You can't really compete over. I mean, there's minimal fees, so I think you've got to drive up like the number of people in it. And their angle is they're going to take their same. They're building on this. So I think we talked when. Why did they spend all this money and time on Exxon? Well, that helps them market this index fund, and they can get, I think like the fee is like 0.2% or something like that. In general, I've seen like most people will advise like a index fund. If you're in like a ETFs, like try and avoid fees above like 0.5%. So I think a lot of these like index funds, especially where there's not much going on in terms of the selecting what's in there. There's not a lot of analysis. They're just buying what the index represents, but they can use their kind of their activist role to drum up more interest in that. And I think like, if you're looking at it, it's probably, I don't know what it competes with directly. I'm sure you could find some funds that are tracking the exact same index. But I would lean towards something like this if they're actually taking on a role. So it seemed like a smart That's first marketing ploy on Exxon to drum up the interest in their, or drum up name recognition, and now getting some interest in this fund potentially. And in Betterment, the reason I came across it, they sent it out, they have a socially responsible investing portfolio, but it's challenging. Like some of the stuff in there is just like Apple, and it's like, well, Apple, I know might cover your ears. They're like they're doing good, but it's like they're mining batteries. They're not like, it's not like it's like environmentally friendly necessarily, but they're trying to get to it. But if you're buying, so
their main business is not sequestering carbon,
right?
Yeah.
But if you can buy Apple through, so Betterment, they could be like, well, here's some shares of Apple. They're not horribly evil. But if you can buy shares of Apple through this ETF, that's like an activist managed one. That seems to be smart, and it seems Betterment was super excited to have that as an offering now.
That's that they would at least. So for people that don't remember. Engine Number One's like a relatively small hedge fund who got, I think, two or maybe three. They were going for four board seats out of 12 on ExxonMobil's board. ExxonMobil spent $30 million to stop them. They spent something like $30 million to get them. They did end up winning, which I think it's debatable, but I feel like it's a pretty big deal. And they're pushing Exxon to be more environmentally friendly. This is interesting. I mean, they're obviously not going to be as big as the Vanguards, the BlackRocks, the State Streets, because the reason those guys are big is because they have just the institutions behind them, right? You put money with them because your 401k is hosted there and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. But yeah, I like the idea of like, if I'm putting money in an index fund, I like that these guys are hopefully going to vote the way that I would want them to vote, right? And not just the way management wants them to vote, or at least with an environmental social governance tilt.
So I could basically, like, you know, if I'm going to buy Spider is like the typical S&P 500 fund, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's like I'm assuming it's a Vanguard fund. Is it Spider?
I know Spider. I think all the Spiders are their own thing. And I think it is State Street.
Yeah.
Well,
it is State Street. Yeah. Okay.
Let's see.
So, but regardless, Spider's supposed to mimic the S&P 500. So I can get something that's going to perform almost the same as that, except if I put money in this Engine Number One fund instead of Spider, then I'm going to get this also the social benefits of a bunch of people who are going to be like crusading a-holes in my wokeness, in favor of my wokeness. I like that. So that's interesting because my in-laws are woke and they are asking me, like, you know, it's constantly like, well, you know, I was going to invest in this thing that this guy told me about that makes it so like the sun rotates around the moon and it makes everything better. I'm just like, nope, don't do it. No, just worry about trying to make money right now. This is like, you're not giving anything up. You're just have the people who are managing it are going to be aligned with your desires.
Spider is State Street. Go ahead. By the way.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and I think it ends up doing like the guy that's going to make the sun revolve around the moon. Like he's not going to have that big of a presence. But if you're going in like for those kind of companies that are smaller, you could try and invest in them. But they're in our lifetime, maybe could get to the level of like one or two of those could get to the level of these large cap stocks. These large cap companies.
So this one is good
because it's like it's inside these companies trying to fix those because they're not going to get it seems a lot easier to go into a company and try and fix it than create a new company that's going to overthrow it and do better.
Right. And there's this other element of like a lot of social investing. The way that they talk about social investing is like, oh, I'm a fund manager. I'm getting pressure from people. So I'm going to divest from tobacco stocks or oil stocks or whatever. And it's fine. Like you're voting with your feet. That's fine. But you're not affecting the market. There's too many people who just want money. And it's not as if when you're in the secondary market, you're not talking about buying new issuance. You're not starving these guys of cash. You're not doing anything to change them. But this is something where you're not actually giving up return to say, oh, I'm only going to pick companies that are socially conscious. And because they're socially conscious and, you know, God is just that, you know, I'll end up making the same returns. You're not making those sacrifices by trying to pick winners who only are consistent with your views. You're like, no, I'm going to have the S&P 500 and I got a man on the inside who's going to push these guys to make decisions that are consistent. This is so much better. Well, so much better.
And I would say that it's not even like it's almost not even that big of a deal, right? It's not a big deal in the sense that you're still doing the same exact thing. Like if I'm, you know, I invest in Tesla, not primarily, but at least partially for the environmental stuff. I love that about them, but I'm not going to put my entire 401k into Tesla. I'm going to put it into an index fund.
I mean, do I have to tell you to YOLO? Like,
pretend I'm a normal person that's not on Wall Street Bets. But this is just great because you can get the exact same thing, but with a little bit of a push into the direction that you know you would prefer. I like it a lot. So now, Do you know, so they're running it, are they running it through Betterment or do they have their own?
No, I mean, it's just a ticker fund. You can it's just buy an ETF. Under Vote, though I like Mike kept saying Woke. I feel like that's a pretty good stock ticker if I'm we sure want to make a competitor to be it. One.
Does anybody have Woke? Who's got Woke?
I don't know.
That's a good
Somebody's
question.
Somebody's got to have Woke. Like, but, you got it. There's some millennial that's got Woke. Come on.
I would be this, surprised if out. It wasn't taken.
This one just...
You would think...
No.
Woke would be some SPAC, company. Right? Somebody's got to have a Woke SPAC.
You'd think.
Shocking.
That should, Cap SPAC should be like Woke, but it's not.
Yeah.
Woke ticker. Yeah. Like, let's just start a SPAC right now, guys.
Woke SPAC.
It's a...
There's Wake Forest Bank Shares. Oh. No Woke.
Okay. We should get on that. I don't think it's cheap
All right.
to start a ticker. We should use some of those advertising dollars that we earn.
Well, if you say dibs, though, then you're good. Right?
Dibs.
Or do as you have to say
attention,
shop
anyone listening to this podcast, we call dibs on Woke ticker.
Yeah. We call dibs.
Legally binding.
So I'm not a lawyer, but I'm pretty confident if I was, I would make that a law. Yeah. And that's how lawyers work.
Yeah. I think it's based on like precedent and we said it first. So
I need to buy Vote. That's what you're telling me? Well, Vote is the ticker?
Index fund. Yeah, buy this.
Buy that as a different index fund. If you're very confused by it, not any of you guys, but people listening, you can just go and choose a socially responsible investing portfolio through Betterment, and it will allocate some of your funds to that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think like this seems, I want to track it, or I'd like to see a little bit more like what it's actually supposed to be. Like find the BlackRock or the Vanguard and State Street equivalent of this fund, mm-hmm. just to understand what it is.
Do you think that like Vanguard or
the top listings there?
Do you think Vanguard or State Street are gonna like have a stop the steal rally because like this is like a fraudulent vote?
You know, that's the thing. That problematic. I feel like Vanguard and State Street are still I don't think that they don't care.
But for the reason you said, though, Jeff, like Vanguard, if Vanguard's your employer's 401k custodian, mm-hmm. you're going to buy the Vanguard version of this fund because it's going to show up as zero fee in your 401k, and the State Street one's going to show up as like a higher fee, or they won't even offer it. So I think that's how they corner the market more so than I've tried to buy Vanguard funds in Fidelity. I used to have a Vanguard account. When I moved it over to Fidelity, it's like, well, mm-hmm. we're going to charge you when you buy and sell it. And there's just a lot more fees associated with the funds.
So
if you worked for Vanguard, do you feel obligated to drive a van? I think I would. I think maybe a conversion van, but like.
I would. Their logo is a boat, so life. I would probably drive a boat. I'm assuming I'd be pretty rich confusing. If I worked for them.
I would have a conversion van that would have like a really cool hood ornament, like, you know, like a sea woman who's out on the front of a boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I would have a sea themed or nautical themed, graphic painted on the side, probably airbrushed.
Oh, yeah. And one of those little bubble windows. Like, definitely. No, but definitely. Otherwise, no windows.
Yeah. And then on the other side, free candy.
Yeah.
Those guys are all Democrats, right?
Vanguard, park I think it, they are. Park it out. I think they are.
Yeah, park it outside of, what's that ping pong place? Ping pong pizza?
Ping pong pizza.
I was just making something Galaxy Pizza. Is that what it is? You know what I'm talking about. DC. Yeah.
Hillary's Pizza Restaurant.
Oh, yes.
Hillary's Pizza Restaurant.
Right. Her emails. Can you guys believe her emails? Sorry to go on a tangent, but her emails. That's got to be the worst thing that's happened in the last, in this century.
Was writing and sending emails.
She was sending them, but we don't know what's in them.
Yeah.
Because they were on a piece of machinery in her house.
Ugh,
and that's disgusting. Now we don't know.
I'm not a huge fan of her in general.
No,
but
that's the shitty part. Like I was gonna say the show House of Cards, they say is like in part inspired by the Clintons, the Netflix show. It's like there's plenty of things you can find that the Clintons have done that's terrible. That's not the thing. Yeah. Like
Bill, apparently that show I didn't know that show was based on them, but so Bill killed someone in the subway?
I think so. I think so.
Definitely did.
Breaking
More
news.
More than one.
Or he had his Frank guy do it for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to other rich and powerful people, we got some more space news this week, guys. The space news just doesn't stop. It really doesn't.
When you have a pissing contest in space, does it just like float like bubbles in the inside
of
the thing?
You don't want to do that. It's really gross.
Like, this is the thing that's hilarious. Like, I think about the show, which I have to rewatch because somebody shared a clip of it recently, Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And like some of the stupid billionaire pissing contests of like, oh, I'm so like environmentally friendly. They're driving like that little like motorcycle car, stupid stuff. Like, this is so much more insane than even a stupid sitcom. Think, oh, yeah, like, no, I'm going to go to space 2 weeks before you do after you announced it.
So this is the thing that's so funny to me. So this news is, if you're listening to this, you probably already heard, but Virgin Galactic's founder, Dick Branson, also known as Richard, went to the edge of space. So he did it. They have this crazy contraption that flies this rocket plane way up, you know, way up into the ionosphere.
Atmosphere. They're reading hemisphere, the United
Eastern Hemisphere.
So, yeah. And then this rocket ship takes off from the bigger plane, and then they fly up and they're in space for, you know, whatever, a minute or two. They go weightless. It did look, the pictures in the video that they sent look pretty fantastic. I mean, you're in space. You're in the blackness of. It's not like you look like you're on a plane anymore. I mean, you're in space. But yeah, the fact that he did it right, and so then Elon was apparently there with him the night before, like congratulating him or
they're
cheering.
Buds, it seems.
They're like best buds. Elon already had a ticket like previous to this to fly on, you know, Virgin Galactic's spaceships. So it seems like everyone just doesn't like Bezos. I mean,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like.
I mean, just to be clear about this, Virgin Galactic flies 80 kilometers above the Earth's surface, which is 262,000 feet. Blue Origin goes 100 kilometers.
Oh, well.
Okay. Which is 328,000 feet. And is commonly known as the Karman line.
Yep.
So whilst Virgin Galactic crosses the boundary as recognized by the U.S. and like who's the people who FAA?
Yeah,
the FAA says is outer space. The Uber nerds say the Karman line is actually outer space, and that's what Bezos is going to
now. We all know that America runs the world, and so what we say goes.
Clearly.
So what these guys are just arguing over minutia. We already said where space is, and they should all accept it.
But Branson's not an American citizen, so that clearly means that he did not do it.
What's the Rick and Morty? They have snakes in space.
Yes,
literally everything is space.
So I was gonna make that comment today. I saw some Gizmodo article or something. Basically, I don't know why people really love attacking this as if Richard Branson just spent this money on curing cancer, all the cancer would be gone. Like, it would be a drop
clearly,
in the bucket.
Clearly.
Those arguments bother me for a lot of reasons, but this guy was sort of making those arguments, but also being a jokester and saying like, I hate space because it's cold in space. And like, space's only export is meteors that devastate humanity, yada, 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 yada. But I wanted to comment. Yeah. You're already in space, jackass. We're all in space. Like,
we're breathing. Yeah. The whole Earth flies around in that shit all day long.
Literally everything is in space.
Tina Fey had a Weekend Update where she was going through and she's like, so scientists have figured out how to make seedless watermelons. And she pauses and she goes, cancer scientists, we still have cancer. As if all of the scientists are just sitting in a room deciding what to do. Yeah, and these guys are like, yeah, cancer's a problem, but we got this seed thing. Yeah, like, you know.
Don't focus on anything else other than this one problem that kills people. But
yeah.
I mean, anyway,
nice
so
we solved it.
But the other news that came out today related to this is Jeff Bezos, the guy that won the auction to go up into space with Jeff Bezos for like $30 million, had a scheduling conflict and will not be going anymore.
But I'm just throwing this out there.
Yeah.
When you have a conflict, you choose which one to go to.
Mm-hmm.
I would choose the one that I spent $30 million on.
Yep.
Yeah. It's got to be pretty important if you're like, hey, you have a chance to go to space, you know? I mean, if I don't go to this doctor's appointment, I got to pay a $25 fee, though.
My daughter has a soccer game that day. I should have really looked at my calendar.
It's got to be something reasonably important that, like, I this is an excuse that somebody made up, right?
Well, he's probably, I mean, the person that can afford to spend that much money on the first, you know, because I'm sure you could go next year for a lot cheaper. He just wanted to be the first one. So like, or, you know, he probably runs a company. He needs to be there for something, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, there's no change fees after COVID on these kind of things, guys.
Oh, like, that's a good point.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I didn't think about that.
But they're just going
to
give him
a mask
credit
up there. That would be a pain in the ass.
The mask thing would
I
be
mean,
a
I think
pain.
Your point is valid, Jeff, because it's like the first trip would generate more, a higher bid than like subsequent trips. So he's paying a premium, but not getting... It's like if you bought a first class ticket and then they're like, oh, well, we'll redeem it for coach, but we'll still get you there.
Yeah. Well, and then he's, you know, maybe he doesn't want to do it anymore because Richard Branson already did it. He's like, screw that.
Bryn's got a friend whose father made a lot of money on software and had a software company. He's got a $600,000 ticket, I think it's on Virgin Galactic.
Yeah. I think they're the How only much? Ones selling.
$600,000.
The Musk one said, I don't even know if he mentioned that. Did you say he has a ticket?
He has a ticket, yeah.
He does, yeah.
And I thought it quoted like $250,000. So I was going to ask you guys, like, between $30 million and $250,000 for a 20-kilometer difference of space, like, is that... Are you paying that extra 29.7 million?
Honestly, want to start with the cheap one. See if the experience is good. Maybe like 20% more would be that much better. I don't know.
Then you go for a second trip.
Yeah, you do both.
Right. You do three because if you get on a SpaceX flight, that's nice too.
There you
I
go.
Do well Blue Origin and SpaceX. I think that's a whole different experience. And that I mean, I'd be terrified.
True.
But like
True.
The just feeling like a rocket, like going up into space. I'm sure when the Virgin one like fires up the rocket when it's up in the atmosphere, you're feeling something. But it's to launch from like the Earth and it's just like, okay, you're on top of a missile that's
Especially
burning
a penis shaped like, one.
Yeah,
that's
penis
shaped
missile.
Yeah,
to space.
Definitely. Like,
yeah, that's fair. I think that would be two experiences, and I think the one I would want first was the more airline like experience.
Yeah.
For a cheaper price.
I might even do the one that's always interested me and probably the only one I would ever pay for is the like the Vomit Comet one.
Yeah.
They take
you
up and like they go in these arcs, so parabolic.
It looks
arcs,
really cool until I hear the name.
Yeah. you got a fat fast before. You like fasting.
Yeah, that's true. That might make it worse though. Then you're just heaving up. I don't know.
So the $28 million guy.
Bring one of those bio bags.
An 18-year-old is taking his place. Why did the 18-year-old get to go?
So he was second. I guess he was the second bidder.
I thought he won a contest.
Oh, did he win a contest? Oh, okay. I saw something about runner-up.
I would be a little pissed if an 18-year-old has like $21 million.
That's true. Maybe it's his son. This guy's son. Who knows? Graduated from high school last year and plans to study physics. That's wonderful. The Netherlands. Weird. I don't know. Some 18-year-old's going. I didn't read this whole thing because I don't care that much.
Well, it is straight. It's like Jeff B's going. Well, even like the auction one because, right, it's Jeff B, his brother, and then just like some random person.
Oh, you know what it is? It is. This person had also paid money in the auction.
Yeah.
This guy is the son of the CEO of Somerset Capital Partners, which implies to me guy has a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy paid for the seat and chose for his son to fly instead.
Ah, okay. Purchased a ticket for his son, given Oliver's interest in space and aviation. Huh. Well, That's a nice little gift. Get to accompany Bezos into space.
Yeah, I wonder, do you think like the guy that bid it, now I'm curious, I don't think there's much details on him, like how much of it was going to space versus like networking with Jeff B.
Right. Well,
let me ask you this question. If an 18-year-old at our high school got sent up in a rocket because his dad paid $20 million, that guy would get mocked, right? Like he would have a tough last couple months of high school.
I went to high school with a couple people that probably maybe not that rich, but somewhat
they're
close.
In the world. Yeah.
The one guy, you know, they would drive one of five cars to school every day, and like everyone knew they had a ton of money, and you kind of mocked them a little bit, but then they like bought the school a hockey stadium, and you're like, oh, that's cool. I like that. So
I feel like if you're in that world, I don't know, like I have no idea like what I would do if I was there, but like I do think that if I had a couple $100 million, like my kid would drive a new car, but he wouldn't have the pick of five cars,
right?
You know?
Yeah, well,
just like to protect him.
But you also have to factor in that like you're an absentee father, you see him mm-hmm. 1-3 days a month, and you feel bad. I mean, about that
is that different than now?
I know you wish that you saw.
Yeah, oh, that's right. I wish I saw my kid once a month, but in fact, I actually love him and see him all the time. That is frustrating for me. Yeah. I wish I could be an absentee dad. Yeah.
Recommendations?
Nexties?
Let's do it. So mine, I just heard about this movie coming out. I haven't actually seen the movie because it comes out, tomorrow as of the release of this episode. In theaters, Roadrunner, a film about Anthony Bourdain. We have a link to the trailer in the podcast show notes. But I don't know how you guys feel about this. I love that guy. Like everything he did was fairly very interesting to me. I know some people have stopped watching his shows because it's kind of sad. For those of you who don't know, he committed suicide. The whole thing is sad and tragic.
On location, doing his job.
No way, did he really?
Yeah. I mean, not like in a hotel, but like that's the thing. Yeah. That's what made me sad about it, because it's like you watch a show and you're like, this guy's got an amazing,
right,
awesome life. He's doing all these cool things. It's like, oh, when he's out doing that, he's like, eh, nope.
He's depressed.
This isn't good. So it's just weird to like, I was watching that show actively like in that season when it happened, and then I couldn't finish it. But a movie could be nice as some closure.
Oh, and hopefully I think it's about his life and about this whole thing, like why he did this. So you kind of get maybe a better idea of what he was really going through. Anyway, I'm going to check it out.
Nice.
Interesting.
Is it in movie theaters like AMC?
It says theaters in theaters, but I don't know. Like, I'm assuming.
Like, that's who's exciting.
I'm
sad. I missed like, so I just found out today LA's back to masks again. After
what?
Like 2 weeks without
that's
it.
That's terrible, huh?
Oh, God.
I don't know how that's going to go. I was so enjoying like 1 week of yoga being reopened.
So I have to bring a mask out there?
You should definitely bring a mask. Yeah.
Yeah.
But now you actually have to wear it everywhere again. So, yay. Mm.
Yay.
Speaking of LA, I've been reading this book called Everything Now, Lessons from the City State of Los Angeles by Rosecrans Baldwin. Relative to you? Everyone's been asking.
Rosecrans. Oh, yeah.
Guildenstern?
So that's a famous, that's like a well-known road or street in San Francisco or in Los Angeles. And it's like this guy, like I think, got a land grant. He's like a distant relative and named after.
What's
Rosecrans?
Rosecrans is a famous street?
Not Baldwin. But Rosecrans. And I think it was somebody's last name.
Is it Rosecrans or Rosencrans?
Rosecrans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, what interested me about the book is, like, we've talked about Los Angeles before on the podcast, and just I think if it's a state, it would be like in the top 10, like 9 or 10 population wise. It's just, it's massive, and you think of it as like a city, but it's not. Like, San Francisco is a city in a state, and maybe you could make a case that it's on its own, but Los Angeles, it's just like its own mega region all by itself that happens to be in California. So the guy starts comparing it to like famous city states of the past, talks a little bit about like the history of up until like I don't know, the 1700s, 1800s, like city states, like before countries really formed, like those were the big, big things. Like Venice was a big city state. Rome, way back, it was just like states and nation states weren't things. And he's like, well, Los Angeles is a modern example of that. It's got like culture from around the world. People don't really identify. They identify as being in Los Angeles first, California second, US third, maybe. So, but then he tells like he lives here and he's just gone through it. Telling these little stories, kind of like vignettes that he weaves together of like his experiences there to kind of back up his claim. So it's been, I started reading on vacation earlier, last month, and it's just been like a nice summer read, a little bit like it's interesting, but lighter, some lighter reading. Cause it's a lot of stories and talking about his experiences. So especially if you're, I was interested in it because I live here, but, still am learning about the area. But if you have any interest in LA, it's been a fun read.
Nice.
Hmm. Yeah, I am quasi.
I'll hold it up so
that
all the listeners can see.
Oh, it's a nice green cover. That's bright, very bright.
It is.
Yeah.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. There you have it. My recommendation is Toto Bidets. We've talked about the bidet, but I don't think I've ever actually made it my recommendation. Have I?
I don't think so. If not, it was a long time ago.
I got a lot of butt stuff.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, here's why it's
bringing
come
up a lot of poop stories on this episode.
A lot of butt stuff. Yeah. So the reason it's come up recently is I'm the only human being that is held responsible for making sure that we don't run out of toilet paper. So obviously I forgot. So we had no toilet paper today. And just while you guys were giving your recommendations, I was on Amazon purchasing some more. So we probably won't have any tomorrow either. But what we do have is a bidet to wash our buttholes. And we also have a daughter who...
Does she use it?
She doesn't. She can't climb up that high. My son does.
Oh, wow.
So here,
I didn't know what the minimum age is.
Oh, well, it's got a remote. You think that kid's not going to take advantage of a remote? Yeah, the guy's all over that thing. Now, whether or not he wipes his butt afterwards, which I think is a requirement, and he probably opts out of more when I'm not in there.
Shake it off.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, that bidet has been a lifesaver. Yeah. So I've been bideting my butt, and I still, like, I grab some wipes because we got wipes for the little kid just to make sure everything's okay down there. But pretty sweet situation since we've had it. I was dead set against it before my wife bought it. It's not inexpensive. Once we got it, I was like, "Nah, this is just a better life."
Now you got the toilet that actually has one in it, like the full thing, or is this a seat?
No, we got a toilet. This is a seat that goes on top. Yeah. My wife had a thing.
She used to have the tushy.
She used to have the tushy. Tushy's
not good. It's like an Instagram.
Not
one.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was good.
Yeah.
No, I think it's just like.
I mean,
overly marketed
compared to the. To the Toto?
Yeah.
Well,
it's not even. It's sure. Like, it's the difference between buying like a Yugo or versus a Tesla.
But the Toto,
it's just not the same.
The Toto is like, literally they sell $10,000 toilets.
Yeah, it's
like they're
a toilet
they're
company,
the,
so no, they know.
Well, if you buy the whole toilet, it might be.
Yes.
The thing I put on top of my toilet.
The Tushy's like the one, like they found a factory in China, slapped a label on it and put up Instagram ads. Like that.
Okay.
That's why it's not as good of quality, I think.
Yeah, and there's like a knob on the side. It's like it's not a good experience. Yes. Toto.
It's shitty.
It's less than $1,000 for the seat. If you don't buy a $10,000 toilet. I'm an asshole, but I don't have a $10,000 toilet.
Yeah.
Okay. I wash my kid in a bucket still. Like, this is like you'll see the plastic bucket I wash my kid in.
I will say your, you know, $1 million+ home only has one bathroom, so you're gonna make it a nice one. I get
it. That's yeah. But I'll tell you what, when we go on vacation now, I'm like, I sit down on a toilet seat. I'm like, this isn't heated. This is terrible. Horrendous.
This is a room temperature toilet seat? Ugh.
Ugh. Like cold thighs? What is this? Like 1800?
So
are we in an outhouse?
Now this thing attaches to any toilet or does it have to be a Toto toilet?
It doesn't have to be a Toto toilet, but I think it does have specifications. My wife implied to me in my protest before the purchase that this one was made for this specific toilet. I don't think that's the case, but there is
it's like the seat shape at least.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
Yeah. You need because there's like an oval or a round.
Well, which
one
do you have,
styles.
Sean?
So I have, I forget the, I can go run a check real quick if you guys want. I forget the brand.
Do it.
There he goes. He's out.
So I got the Toto, the, no, not Toto. What's the Tushy? The travel bidet.
Oh,
which, yeah. If you're traveling, where do you... it's basically just a water bottle with a weird squirty top, which sounds kind of weird and gross and all of those things until, you know, you shit in a random you know, place and you're like, oh, I have this thing. This is going to be so much better. So, you know, it is what
I
it is.
I got the deluxe bidet from Jeff B. It's sold on there. It's I got the Neo 185. It doesn't do hot, which apparently, like, that was my big not why it took me so long to buy one. And then I kept reading reviews, and people are like, your butthole doesn't care. You don't need warm water. I thought I would, because you'd want, like, a warm shower or, like, even, like, warm water to wash your hands. So it doesn't do that. But it's, I mean, it's been great. It's got a, it just mounts on, like, the side of the toilet.
Well, you guys will be at the homestead, so you can tell me that you don't need warm water on your butthole after you get some warm water on your butthole at my house.
See, I don't. So you had to like hook it up to a hot water tap and all that. Then.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I have to? No.
Yeah.
Oh, somebody in my household did.
Yeah.
The white glove Toto installers.
No.
Had to.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't know. Actually, I don't think it's hooked up to hot water. I think.
Or you have to plug it in.
There's a heat.
Yeah, see that. I mean, that wouldn't work in my bathroom because I have one power outlet that's like over the sink that would be.
Oh, I've seen you take power outlets off the wall before.
I try and minimize the wiring work I do in rental properties that I don't own, but not completely avoid it, but minimize.
All right, shameless plugs.
Shameless plugs. Thebubbleboard.com. Check it out for all the stock bubbles.
Betterment. I'm going to plug that because I was talking about it. I'll put a link in there. You can get up to your first $5,000 managed for free. That's a robot working for you, managing $5,000. You're not even paying them.
Stupid robot.
Nice. Dummies. DashyDash.com, BookcaseCoffee.com. You know the drill. Happy end of episode, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job, guys.
Bye. We did it.
Talk to you next week.
Worst People We Know was recorded, edited, and produced in the Golden State, with a little bit of help from the Sunshine State.
The Garden State instead of the Sunshine State, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and find us on Twitter at TWPWK. Thanks.
And it wouldn't record, like nothing. And then I would clap really loudly, and you would see.
Well, speaking of, let's do that now that you've ruined everything.
Yeah.
On the TN2. Huh. Have you considered stealing a microphone from two employers ago?
Yeah,
That's how I do it.
I was just looking. All I managed to steal, I have these chip clips. Well, they're binder clips from an office. And I was like, I'm glad that. But before I left my last like real job where you had a supply closet, I stole a bunch of binder clips so I can like clip up these bags. That was a good move. But.
Yeah, big ticket. Yeah, what happened there, Sean, with your chaos after we started?
What do you mean?
Did you switch devices or something?
Oh, I just moved the iPad down to a different spot because.
Oh, okay.
Like I was just. Feeling like I was doing that, and I didn't want to. I don't know how much I moved my head, but I didn't want to keep doing.
Gotcha.
This turning thing and talking into that. But I've been working on. I didn't like this view before, but I've really been working on my neck muscles,
and trying to tighten them up.
Tighten up. Make sure I don't have like a double chin and all that kind of stuff. So
how do you do that?
I feel like I don't know.
Just make really yoga.
Weird faces and yoga.
All right, we stopping recording?
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.